We will be continuously reading from page number 427, from where we left this morning. The next outline is about identification of the root of samsara and also presentation of the nature of the ignorance. And the Shaman Lamrim's way of explaining the Special Insight Chapter is by quoting a line from the Special Insight Chapter of Lama Tsongkhapa Lamrim. Then while interpreting this that line from Lama Tsongkhapa's text, he further brings in more other scholars' views and so on. So in the second chapter on Special Insight by Lama Tsongkhapa has a line that reads in this way: any kind of afflicted mind that grabs all the phenomena as having its own intrinsic reality is the ignorance, which is the first of the 12 interdependent links. And when Shama Rinpoche's commentary for the line comes, he first starts by identifying the nature of the ignorance and marking that kind of ignorance as the root of being taking numerous rebirth in the samsara, or the root of the samsara. So the root of the samsara is ignorance, and ignorance is here identified as afflicted mind that grabs all the phenomena as having its own intrinsic nature. If that is the case with respect to the identification of the ignorance, then what about the attachment and the desires? So this is the argument. So what about the attachment, the desires, which also have a sense of grasping, which also has the sense of grasping of true existence to their particular objects? So whether the attachment, the desires also should be categorized as the ignorance here that we are discussing. So that was the question. So the Shama Rinpoche draws a distinction between grasping of true existence from itself or with the effect of another corresponding or the omnipresent mind. So if the attachment or the desire itself grabs the object having its own true existence but independently without the help of other presented other mental factors, then that kind of the attachment and the desire has to be categorized as the ignorance here. So this is what His Holiness commented this morning with respect to the very subtle subtle form of the desire and attachment that is only being labeled or identified by the highest Madhyamika school, that is the Madhyamika Prasangika school. However, the other kind of the attachment and the desire that we have, which can be identified by all the schools commonly, especially the Svatantrika Madhyamika schools, do not need to be identified as the ignorance here. And also sometimes the ignorance itself is being categorized as a mental factor here. So with the effect of the mental factor, sometimes the attachment also functions as ignorance due to the power of the corresponding mind ignorance. So such kind of attachment or the desire do not need to be categorized as the as the ignorance here. So that is the distinction that Shama Rinpoche draws here. Then the following arguments also speaks about whether the ignorance is a mind, the primary mind, or the mind, or it should be categorized as a mental factor. So generally, the mind grasping the true existence can be a mind and a mental factor both. But when Lama Tsongkhapa refers to the mind grasping true existence as ignorance, he doesn't mean that all that grabs the true existence need to be a mental factor. So the mental fact, the mind grasping true existence either can be a primary mind or a secondary mind or a mental factor. So therefore, all the omnipresent mind, along with the ignorance, or even the corresponding mind. So when we say here corresponding, the corresponding here is calculated from five aspects of corresponding, the mind and the mental factors. So any kind of mental factors of the mind that corresponds with the ignorance, all function as ignorance by nature, but they are not categorized as the primary ignorant that we are discussing here. And in the next outline, Shama Rinpoche quotes a line from the 400 verses of Aryadeva, where it says that the seat of rebirth is consciousness. And when the term the seat of rebirth is consciousness, Shama Rinpoche further adds in a lot of extra words to make the sentence meaningful. So by the term seed, he means the mental imprints, the negative mental imprints, which is present in all the sentient beings, that brings us all to the cycle of rebirth in the samsaric world. And the seat of the mental imprints here also doesn't necessarily need to mean the latent propensities of our mind. It can also mean the mind grasping true existence and other attachments and the desires and so on. So those minds are referred to as the consciousness on one part, and the forms, the sound, and other external objects as the focal objects of that consciousness on the other hand. So having been able to see all the phenomena, whether it's a person or the phenomena, as being empty or being selflessness. So having generated such a kind of mind, and if you train further and become more familiar with such kind of altruistic and wisdom-based mind, then one will be able to eliminate the seed of being reborn, the seed that gets us, that takes us to the cycle of samsara again and again. So that was the gross meaning of the quotation of the 400 verses, that seed of rebirth is consciousness. Then next, Shama Rinpoche also quotes another verse from 400 verses, which says that as the body faculty is spread over all the parts of our body from head to toe, similarly, the ignorance also stays in all the mental afflictions. So therefore, if we are able to eliminate the ignorance, which is the root of all the afflicted emotions, so if you cut the root, then all the corresponding afflicted emotions will be eliminated automatically. So by when commenting on this verse from 400 verses, Shama Rinpoche further explains that, for example, our eye faculty and sound faculty and so on spread over all over our body, which are referred to as the basis. And since these faculties If these faculties cease to function, then the consciousness based on those faculties, such as I consciousness, will cease to function. Therefore, similarly, the mind which grabs all the phenomena as true existence, which is the ignorance, which is here taking the metaphor, by represented by the metaphor of the eye faculty and so on. So if we are able to cut the root of the ignorance, then we will not have to take the rebirth again and again in the samsara, as the ignorant is the root of the samsara. And Shama Rinpoche's commentary on this verse, he has said here that he has taken reference from two texts of the Master of Rendava and also by Jesup J. And next is the more broader presentation about the nature of the ignorance from different schools and texts. The first is coming from the Avidhamma Kosha, the treasure of manifest knowledge by Vasubandhu, where he quoted a line which says that ignorance is actually the opposite of what is called cognitions. And the main presentation here is that Vasubandhu in his Abhidhamma Kosha maintains that ignorance is an independent mental factor, which means that all the primary mind actually have five omnipresent minds, and it is said according to the guidelines of the mind and the mental factors studies that only one kind of mental factors are supposed to be going corresponding to the primary minds. And so there cannot be two attachment, there cannot be two anger, there cannot be two awareness and so on around being corresponding to one primary mind. So Vasubandhu's standpoint here is that ignorance is by itself an independent mental factor which is against the wisdom realizing the nature or reality. And this has been further supported and presented in a similar in the text of Paramana Vardhika. The Paramana Vardhika's presentation is a bit different from the Vasubandhu's presentation from the treasure of manifest knowledge. As far as the Paramana Vardhika's presentation, the Dhammakriti's presentation in the Paramana Vardhika goes in this way, that he did not maintain that ignorance need to be an individual mental factor. Therefore, when we calculate the different mental factors and try to categorize them into different groups, one of the way to group all the mental factors into two is to be grouped as the view and non-view. For example, wisdom is considered as a view, view in the sense of the mind was having the capability and potential of being investigative in nature. So they say that the inflicted views can be also ignorance. So their standpoint is that the ignorance do not need to be an individual independent mental factor. It can be any of the five omnipresent mind. So having presented the different schools' view of the nature of the ignorance, so finally Shama Rinpoche presents here the nature of ignorance from the Madhyamika Prasangika's view, where it says that similar to the Dhammakriti's presentation, that the ignorance here do not need to be an individual mental factor. Uh, However, Shama Rinpoche further says that when the term ignorance is used, it may normally have a reference to the wisdom against the wisdom realizing emptiness or the reality. And the next is about why the ignorance is calculated as one of the 12 interdependent links and the main reason why it is placed on the topmost of the 12 interdependent links. Sorry. And Nagarjuna's presentation on 70 emptiness, where he gave a reference that all the phenomena that arises from cause and conditions cannot have the ultimate nature of intrinsic reality. Therefore, Lord Buddha has stated that any mind or mental factors that look at those phenomena having its intrinsic nature is considered to be ignorant or ignorant mind. And from it arises the 12 interdependent links. So from this quotation, it's sounds very clearly that all the 12 interdependent links were given the terminology of ignorant. And when Lama Tsongkhapa explains why all the 12 interdependent links were given the name ignorant, even though ignorance is only one of them being the first, Lama Tsongkhapa, in his essence of eloquence, explains that since the ignorant plays the most important role, being the first, and all the other 12 interdependent links, such as karma and consciousness, as a resultant state or a result that arising out of the action of the ignorance. So therefore, they all refer to as ignorant. And Lama Tsongkhapa again, in the commentary to supplement to the middle way, says that since the mind that grasps the true existence pertaining to phenomena functions as the basis for generating the grasping of selflessness. The graspings of having true self pertaining to person. And from these two graspings, the 12 interdependent links arises. So this is one order of the explanations from Lama Tsongkhapa. And also Lama Tsongkhapa in the different Lamrim texts from the great extensive texts on stages of path of enlightenment, and also in the middling one, he quote the verses from Nagarjuna verses that as long as you have the grasping for true existence pertaining to your aggregates, which is the phenomena other than self, till then you will also have the grasping similar of that state to the persons. So all the other quotations that we have done before is similar to the quotation that is coming from Nagarjuna's precious garland. And also for the Nagarjuna's later quotations, there are different ways to explain it from the schools of Swatantrika Madhyamika and Madhyamika Prasangika. And now comes the presentation on the 8 difficult points of Madhyamika Prasangika school. And the reason why we refer to them as the 8 difficult points is the reason that they are the differentiating points, or in other words, the points that make the highest Madhyamika Prasangika school the supreme among the other philosophical tenets. And these are the points which differs from the assertions of Swatantrika Madhyamika school and also the Chittamatra Madhyamika school, the mind-only schools. And basically, the 8 difficult points are further categorized into the one which is common to mind-only school, the one which is uncommon or very unique to Mind Only School and also uncommon to the Madhyamika Prasangika School. For example, the first one comes that Madhyamika Prasangika School do not exert the self-cognizing mind. And whereas the mind-only school accept the mind that cognizes itself. And next is about the assertions, non-asserting. Sorry, the second is the Madhyamika Prasangika School accept the externally established phenomena without dependence upon mind. And whereas the mind-only school abolished that theory. And third is not accepting the mind basis of all, which is the primary mind in the mind-only school. So these are the three things which are very unique from compared to the mind-only schools. Then also when it comes to the Madhyamika Svatantrika, there are five things. The first being that Madhyamika Prasangika school asserts that all the arahats in the classes of hearers and solitary realizers need to understand the selflessness pertaining to phenomena directly, whereas the other schools do not assert that. So that is one thing. And second is the mind grasping true existence as an afflicted emotions, whereas the Madhyamika Svatantrika school asserts that the mind grasping true existence as an obscuration to omniscient mind. Then the next is comes about accepting the disintegration as a functioning phenomena or thing. And comes a different presentation of the three times, the past, present, and future. And one of the difficult points here that Shama Rinpoche discussed with the quotation from the Special Insight chapter. And the Special Insight chapter line runs in this way, that one of the primary reasons why the Madhyamika Prasangika school asserts that all in those in the classes of solitary realizers and hearers of the lesser schools, they all, the arahats, they all need to understand the selflessness pertaining to phenomena directly, is that the mind grasping the phenomena as true existence is considered as the primary ignorant, which is the first of the 12 interdependent link. So this is the quotation coming from the Special Insight chapter by Lama Tsongkhapa. And in order to comment further on this line, Shama Rinpoche's commentary runs in the following way. So the ignorance of the 12 interdependent link is actually not just any kind of ignorant. It has to be the primary ignorant pertaining to the grasping of the phenomena as having as true existent. Therefore, in order to be liberated from samsara, we need to understand, we need to be able to eliminate the grasping of true existence pertaining to phenomena. And in order to do that, we need to understand the selflessness pertaining to phenomena and so on. And Shama Rinpoche also quotes here a line from Nagarjuna's Fundamental of Wisdom, and also from the commentary on the Fundamental of Wisdom, that the wise ones will always look forward to eliminate the root of taking rebirth in the samsara again and again. And also the similar comment comes from the Golden Rosary, that even though it may be an object of abandonment by meditative path, but even the arahat has also have traces of the object of abandonment by meditative path. for example, a very strong anger aimed at different objects and so on. So here we have to draw a distinction that even though the arahats do not have those kind of the practitioners who are onwards from the third to the fifth path, even though they do not have the very strong negative karma, that is the capability to take us to be reborn in the lower realms, but they still have some traces of ignorance. So therefore, the mind grasping, the mind grasping phenomena as true existence by natural cannot be one of the true interdependent links. And for this, Shama Rinpoche also gives different quotation from the auto commentary of the Supplemental Madhyamika by Chandrakriti and so on. And at the end of the text, this line, he says that with all the above citations and also by the different reasonings, it comes to very clear that all the arahats, those in the classes of hearer and the solitary realizers, need to perceive the emptiness directly. And this is one of the difficult points of the Madhyamika Prasangika school. Next is about next is the classification of the phenomena into the self and the other than the self or phenomena. Sorry. And for the mind that grabs the self as a true existence, even for such kind of mind, we also need to distinction that their object can be either self or also the phenomena other than self. So generally, the two graspings of the self as true existence and phenomena as true existence are defined based on the object. And the object here is referring to all the phenomena which are again categorized into two as the self and the phenomena other than self. But then sometimes we have the graspings that look at the self and consider that self itself has having a true existence. That is one kind of the graspings. Then there are other kind of the graspings, such as looking at the self, focusing on the self, and then grasping all the possessions without identifying anything in particular. The general, the possession of my things as true existence. So this second category is also said to be coming under the category of the mind grasping the self as true existence. So even though the my thing or the my possessions may not be self, and if you have to categorize them into the self or the phenomena other than self, it may come under the latter, which is a huge debate here. So some masters refer to the first as being fallen into the another category and so on. But this is according to the presentation of Chandrakriti in his the fundament, supplement to the Mithilva, where he says that the root of being reborn in the samsara is due to the fact that first we look at the things which first you look at yourself, the I, and consider that as having its own true existence. Then later, having generated a very strong sense of I or ego, then you look at your possessions and thinks that these are mine, so that thought comes second. Sorry. So when we have to identify the my, the term my or mine, even though if you have to find the specific illustration, it is very difficult to pinpoint. For example, your eye, for example, my eye, my nose are the examples of the mine, my possessions and so on. And my eye and my nose are the basis of designation to which you give the terminology mine thing. So even though your eye and your, for example, my eye and my nose comes under the category of a phenomena other than self, but the mind thing, the grasping of the mind as true existence is again, as we discussed, come under the grasping of self. So here the my eye and the my nose are basis of designation for a mind and my possessions, but they are not, they are generally not said to be mine. So this is a terminology debate here. And in order to make it further clear, there are different views coming from different masters of the different monasteries in Tibet. And Shama Rinpoche here says that there are many schools in Tibet, which many masters in Tibet, which asserts that my eye and my nose are actual mine possessions. And for that, one of the masters is Chuje Pandemba, and in his presentation on Tenet, he also gives many citations and quotations from Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary on the Middle Way philosophy, and also Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary on supplement to Middle Way philosophy to prove his point. And Shama Rinpoche also finds that it may be true. So when we say that the mind which aims at, which focus at the I and grabs actually the mind things, possessions, as having true existence, is actually a grasping of I as true existent. Then the question here comes again whether the mind and the mind possessions are self or not. So Shama Rinpoche's final conclusion is that even though it may not be self, but it is a kind of phenomena that can be, cannot be also categorized as a phenomena other than self, because the basis of the designation of mine or my possession is very hugely dependent about identification of the I or the self. So therefore, it has to be categorized, whether it has to be a third party or either it has to be one of the first. Sorry.
Shumle tamzhe shen la dawa
And now there is another quotation coming from the chapter on spiritual insight by Lama Tsongkhapa, where he says that in the highest Madhyamika school of Madhyamika Prasangika, and when they negate the object of negation pertaining to self as having true existence and so on, they take many references from the lower schools such as Vaibhashika, Swatantrika, and mind-only schools. For example, all the schools lower than the Madhyamika Prasangika school, from the Vaibhashika to Autonomous school or the Madhyamika Swatantrika school, all asserts the self or the person as having substantial self, which does not depend on the phenomena for their designation. So if the tea has arrived, we will do the tea blessing. To repeat the announcement that we did this morning, there will be a review session this afternoon. After the teaching is over, the review session will start immediately, after 15 minutes break, and will be held in the main prayer hall. So those references of the self having its own intrinsic nature differs from the way to present that differs from different schools, from Madhyamika Swatantrika to the Vaibhashika schools and so on. So even though they're all similar in terms of being an object of negation, but due to the different views, different ways to express it, and due to the different assertions by different schools, so therefore here they use different reasons to refute those kind of assertions. So the next major outline comes here, whether such kind of refuting the object of negation by the reasoning of Madhyamika Prasangika or Swatantrika school. And even though the Madhyamika Svatantrika and the Prasangika schools have many agreements in common, many assertions in common to both the schools, however, they differ a lot, as we discuss about the 8 difficult points and so on. And the main differences actually comes from the commentary while explaining the verse that is coming from the Nagarjuna's fundamental of wisdom. When Nagarjuna presents the emptiness both for the both self and phenomena, he has the first line. He has this first verse, which says that there is no sense in anything that has been ever produced, either from self, from something else, from both, or without any causes. So these verses, the Bhava Viveka has a different way to interpret, and also put the syllogism, and Chandakriti and the Buddha Palita has a different way to put the syllogism. And Chandakriti, while explaining these verses from fundamental of wisdom, in his clear words, Prasanapada, he says that when you say there is no sense in anything has ever been produced, so this line is the major point where they differs in explaining that the Bhava Viveka adds the qualification ultimate or the attribute ultimate to that has never been produced. So the Bhava Viveka accepts actually that things that has a function which are referred to as things, generally they arise from the other causes, the causes which has a different timing and which the cause which is different from the resultant state. So for example, when a plant grows, it depends on the causal condition, that is the seed and the sunlight and so on. And since the seed, the sunlight and so on are different or not one with the result and the fruit, so therefore the Bhava Viveka or the Madhyamika Svatantrika asserts that these functioning things arise from a different cause. So when he interprets the line coming from Nagarjuna, he adds the qualification ultimate, and he says that even though they exist, they arise from other causes, but ultimately, they do not arise from other causes, as ultimately nothing arises. And when they put up the syllogism and the reasoning in this way that the eye faculty and all the other inner faculties, they do not exist ultimately because they are existent. So when they put up this syllogism and argue with the non-Buddhist schools, so Chandakriti's further critique to this syllogism is that Bhava Viveka could not put the syllogism very well, and there is a different meaning and different intention behind the way he put the syllogism. And Chandakriti further argues with the Baba, in terms of the Bhava Viveka's presentation, that the reason why he had the qualification ultimate is that he wanted to prove that the things were existing from something else or the one of the four alternatives. And Nagarjuna's, the four alternatives were very clear. And Nagarjuna has presented very clearly in the fundamental of the wisdom that things do not exist from any of the four alternatives, whether from self or for something else or for both or without cause. However, Baba Viveka further explains and makes the argument even longer by saying that, of course, he too accepts that things do not exist by any of the four alternatives that Nagarjuna has presented in the fundamental of the wisdom. But when it comes to the explanation of the four alternatives from the self or something else, Chandrakriti and Baba Viveka differs a lot in their presentation of those four alternatives. So as far as the Baba Viveka is concerned, he adds the term or the attribute ultimate to the second qualities, and in a way he adds the attribute to all the four alternatives, while the Chandrakriti maintains the literal version of the fundamental wisdom as it is, without adding any ultimate, because for the Chandrakriti's philosophical tenet, it is not necessary to say that things do exist from other causes, but they do not exist but ultimately from other causes. So when we refer to the term other causes, here has a very significant difference in one's understanding. So Baba Viveka uses what is called the autonomous reasoning. And the autonomous reasoning and the autonomous causes. And whereas Chandrakriti says there is no such thing as autonomous. And the autonomous, again here, has a meaning that, for example, in the syllogism, the object of the argument and the object to be proved and so on, they seem to have their own autonomous potential to prove the logic right. And also, as for example, if we take the example of the seed and the plant, the seed also has the capacity or the potential to produce the fruit. And this is referred to as the autonomous or the inherent capacity within all the phenomena. So the Madhyamika Svatantrika's presentation is that even though things are empty or being intrinsic, absence of intrinsic reality or not having any true existence, however, they do have traces of their own slight nature. So the combination of having their own nature or own nature existence plus the mental disposition forms the nature of a thing. So this is the standpoint of the Madhyamika Svatantrika school. So they differ in the when it comes to the presentation and the explanation of the four alternatives of existing from the other causes. So even though when the syllogism runs that the eye faculty and all the inner faculties as the basis of the object, basis of argument, and to prove these objects as not having its ultimate reality due to the reason that they're old, existent, or phenomena. So in order to debate, Chandrakriti's critique was that first you need to be able to establish your basis of argument, which is the most important thing. For example, if you are debating on the pot as impermanent because they are a product, so the basis of argument here is the pot. So the pot should be commonly granted or a basis of common basis of the argument that is being accepted by the both parties. However, when you put the eye faculties and all the inner faculties by Baba Viveka, Chandrakriti's critique was that there is not a common basis or a common locus between Chandrakriti and the Baba Viveka. And here, even though the eye faculty also exists in the philosophical tenet of the Madhyamika Prasangika school, but what Chandrakriti meant by it is that when Baba Viveka used the terminology of the eye faculty and so on, his real intention behind was to prove that the eye faculty and the other faculties do have their own autonomous presence. And an autonomous eye faculty is not something that is being accepted by Chandrakriti, because in the Chandrakriti's philosophical tenet, nothing exists autonomous. They're all dependent. So autonomous, Chandrakriti says that is against the theory of dependent origination. So this is another major point of a debate here, which is generally referred to as a debate on the common basis of argument. And the very line coming from Chandrakriti's clear words, even though it is just one line, but the different masters and the different masters have different way to interpret the line. The first one is coming from Lama Tsongkhapa in his Essence of Eloquence. When he interprets the line from the clear words, he says that even though Baba Viveka accepts that there is a common accepted basis for argument. So the basis of the argument is being is something to be findable, is something that can be established by a valid cognition. And Baba Viveka further says that it may not be necessarily to differentiate or add any kind of attributes of true existence or not to to the basis of argument here. And we can merely cognize the object itself without any kind of its attributes applied. And Lama Tsongkhapa's commentary further reads that since the autonomous mental faculty, eye faculty, is something to be found by a wrong perception, because it is not something that is accepted by Chandrakriti, and it is created by wrong perceptions. So any findings that is arising from wrong perceptions and a valid cognition cannot be same or cannot be one. So therefore, since there is not a common ground here for argument, finally comes to the conclusion that since there is not one valid cognition that is able to establish the object of the argument, because Chandrakriti stressed on the point that when you refer to the eye faculty, you meant the autonomous eye faculty. And autonomous eye faculty is created by wrong perceptions. However, the mere eye faculty is actually the eye faculty which is independent or dependent origination. And that is not to be perceived by wrong perception. So therefore, between us, there is not a common ground or a common basis for debate. So this is according to Lama Tsongkhapa's presentation, Lama Tsongkhapa's way to explain the line coming from clear words. So further from this argument and debate, Shama Rinpoche also lists here a few other debates which are generally discussed in the debate courtyard. So any findings, any object that is being established by a wrong perception or any other mind has to be contradictory, then it's difficult to come to a common ground. So His Holiness says that we will stop here for today, and we'll read the remaining tomorrow. And also we will do the to the Bodhisattva vows. So it's still two now, so maybe we will read some more. I think you all are very eager to leave. You all seem to be in a great hurry. Maybe I will read for another 10 or 15 minutes. So Tibet here actually runs in this way, that when the mind or a mental factor is labeled as wrong perceptions, so the wrong perceptions can be actually a valid cognition in the philosophical tenets. So to draw the distinction between valid cognition and the wrong perception, for example, all the conceptual thoughts are said to be wrong perceptions. However, they can be valid cognition. For example, that we discussed this morning about the conceptual thought of the meditative state understanding the emptiness. So the conceptual thought are wrong perceptions, So the conceptual thoughts are distorted perceptions in the sense that they are able to perceive the real object only through the meaning generality and dualism appearances and so on. So even though they may be a distorted perceptions, but they can ascertain or establish certain phenomena. So the debate here is that any findings or any object that is being established by a distorted mind and any kind of phenomena that is being established by a non-distorted mind, whether these two are contradictory or not. And the point here is whether one single object can be whether established both by a distorted mind and a non-distorted mind. If that is the case, then what about the ultimate truth? So ultimate truth, whether the ultimate truth is an existent phenomena or non-existent phenomena, of course, it is an existent phenomena. But the debate here is that the ultimate truth is again ultimate truth can be also established by a distorted mind, such as the conceptual or the inferential cognition that perceives the emptiness is again here a distorted mind, because it relies on the meaning generality and also has a dual appearance and so on. So the ultimate truth, even though it is perceived by a distorted mind or a conceptual thought, but again, it is not a non-existent, it is a reliable phenomena or established phenomena. And the debate here is again that when we draw the definition of the two truths, the definition of the ultimate truth and the definition of the conventional truth, so many of the philosophical tenets runs in this way, that the ultimate truth is something which is any kind of phenomena that is being established finally by undistorted mind understanding emptiness. And conventional truth is a phenomenon that is perceived or established by any kind of undistorted mind that understood the truth other than the ultimate truth. So there are different definitions of similar way, and so this is the debate with respect to the differences between this definition and also whether these definitions of the different philosophical systems have whether they have any significance to the common ground, the basis for common debate between the Chandrakriti and the Bhava Vivega. So again, the text further gives more explanation and argument about the common basis of debate here. So generally, when Baba Viveka put the syllogism, actually the person who applies that syllogism is the Baba Viveka, which is the Buddhist from one side. And to whom he presented that was actually the non-Buddhist, the Charvaka and the Samkhya schools. Actually, it's the Samkhya schools masters. So Samkhya schools have different ways to of accepting the self and so on. So in order to defeat them, so Baba Viveka actually brought up the syllogism. But the Chandrakriti actually criticized Baba Viveka in such that even your syllogism or the theory to defeat the Samkhya is not right for even yourself. So how can it defeat the Samkhya traditions? So if you have to understood about the criteria for having a common grounded for argument, is that the object of the argument here, if it is perceived by any kind of valid cognition by the other party, for example, here, the Samkhya masters, so such a similar kind of the valid cognition need to be present in also the other party which laid out the syllogism. So both the parties, the one which put up the syllogism and the one the person to whom the syllogism is being labeled, so both need to have the same valid cognition that perceives the object. So if such a thing exists, then we will conclude that there is a common basis for discussion. If that is the case, then if when they put this syllogism, if both the parties are, for example, say Vaibhashika, one Vaibhashika proponents putting up the syllogism to another Vaibhashika proponent, and one Madhyamika Prasangika school proponent putting the syllogism to another proponent of Madhyamika Prasangika school, if the, in these cases, since both of these two people belong into same philosophical tenets, and they do not have any differences in terms of the agreements, the assertions of the ultimate truth, and so on. So if that is the case, then if this syllogism is being presented to such a circumstances where both the parties happen to be the same philosophical tenet, then do we have a common ground for discussion or not? So, Shama Rumbiche, this is one of the most difficult point debate in this topic. So Shama Rumbiche was very cautious in giving the answer that he says that according to some of the texts of some monasteries, it seems that even within the Madhyamika Prasangika school or within the Vaibhashika school, even if we laid such a kind of the syllogism, we may have to say there is not a common basis for debate, because that kind of syllogism is actually put up only to two different schools, and such kind of syllogism is not meant for putting to similar schools, or the mere terminology, the expression has a different view, and we are not debating about the terminology itself here, but rather the intention behind the person when he put up that syllogism. For example, Baba Viveka, when he actually says the eye faculty and so on, even though merely he says only the eye faculty and so on, but his intention was to say the eye faculty, which is autonomous. Then Shama Rumbiche further says that he finds in one of the writings of Jesup J that in one of the texts of Jesup J that within the Madhyamika Prasangika school, and when it is needed to perceive, when it needs to infer some reasons among the Madhyamika Prasangika schools, so it seems that there is a common basis for argument. So even though it seems to have a common basis for argument, but it do not have to be autonomous reasoning. So therefore, the final here is that Shama Rinpoche's conclusion in that if it is between a different two schools like Madhyamika Prasangika school and Svatantrika school, or a Buddhist and a non-Buddhist, then there won't be a common ground for debate as the object itself is being accepted in a different way. Some asserting it has true existence and some not. But within a Madhyamika school such as Madhyamika Prasangika, it may have a common ground. So we will stop here for today. We're on page here. The Lamrim transmissions will be completed tomorrow, and tomorrow His Holiness will also give the ceremony for aspirational bodhicitta based on Arya Sangha's Bodhisattva Bhumi, and he will also bestow the Bodhisattva vows. His Holiness has mentioned that he would like to meet with Western attendees and also the other foreigners sometime in the morning of the 29th December. We are awaiting confirmation and further details and will announce any updates as soon as possible. The afternoon review sessions for Westerners will continue in the main prayer hall 15 minutes after the teaching with His Holiness this afternoon, and the review session will be carried out by Gishe Chanjub Sangye from Gandhinshanze Monastery and Venerable Tenzin Namda from Sarajay Monastery as interpreter. Thank you. And all, as many attendees are requested to attend this session. Thank you. Dedication prayer from my two collections, vast in space that I've amassed from working with effort at this practice for a great length of time. May I become the chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind's wisdom eye is blinded by ignorance. Even if I do not reach this state, may I be held in your loving compassion for all lives, Manjushri. May I find the best of complete created paths of the teachings. And may I please all the Buddhas by my practice. Using skillful means drawn by the strong force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings. With the points of the path as I have discerned them, may I uphold the Buddha's teaching for a very long time. With my heart going out with great compassion in whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread or once spread have declined, may I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. May the mind of those who wish for liberation be granted boundless peace and and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a very long time. By even this gratitude path to enlightenment completed, due to the wondrous virtuous contact of the Buddhas and their sons. May all human and non-human beings who eliminate adversity and create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent paths never be parted in any of their lives from the purest path praised by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes effort to act in accordance with the tenfold Mayan of virtuous practices, may he always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere.
Oh.
prayer of the roots of truth. By His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama. Magnificent masters of an ocean of limitless good qualities, those born to bliss of the three times, your children and disciples, looking upon destitute migrators like your own child, please pay attention to my true words of sorrow. Expand the doctrine of the completely perfect capable one, which removes the sufferings of cyclic existence and solitary peace, for abundant, extensive welfare and happiness in Jambudeva. Increase the 10 kinds of Dhamma contact of all those learned and accomplished holders of the doctrine. By pacifying all the unbearable dangers of sickness, weapons, and famine, cause those migrators totally compelled by intolerable strong karma, stricken by the torture of sufferings without respite, to recover their breath in an ocean of happiness and joy. Particularly for all migratory beings in the religious snowland, oppressed with evil actions by the barbarian holders from black side, devoid of love, may your power of compassion arise and quickly stop the flow of blood and tears. By the interdependence of the profound suchness of appearance and emptiness, by the power of three sublime ones, compassion and the force of true words, by the power of the truth of infallible action and results, may our prayer of truth be fulfilled soon and without obstacles. May the operation of evil thoughts and deeds of negative forces of humans and non-humans who harbor malice through perverted prayers against the teaching of the victorious ones be totally vanquished through the power of the truth of three jewels.